from KQED.
From KQED News, I'm Andrea Kissick with Quest, our weekly series exploring Northern California's science and environment. It's been almost a year since a huge natural gas explosion destroyed 38 homes in San Bruno and left 8 people dead. Tomorrow, the National Transportation Safety Board is scheduled to release its final report on what caused the explosion. For survivors, it will mark one more milestone in a long recovery, as Amy Stannon reports.
On September 9th, when the blast hit, Tammy Zapata was at home on Earl Avenue, about a block from the explosion.
Mike was there. Amanda was sitting here on the couch watching TV. I was cooking as usual. And when I looked up this way, no matter how high up you looked, all you saw was fire.
She says the pressure of the blast was so powerful, it sucked the air out of her living room.
When you're in a dream and you're trying to run as fast as you can, but you feel like you're getting nowhere, like you're in quicksand, that's how it felt.
A few blocks away on Claremont Drive, Kevin Ashley had just given his kids dinner. Monday Night Football was on TV. Like a lot of people, he thought there had been a plane crash.
I made a split-second decision. I'm not gonna try and get in the car. So I took the kids and I ran around the corner because it's going. If not, we're trapped.
A year later, he still has a hard time talking about it.
First of all, I didn't want to die, but then I go, whatever. I didn't want my kids to die. I didn't want them to be burned, and then I decided it's not going to happen.
And it didn't. The family survived, and they live now in South San Francisco. Ashley's two kids, like many others from the neighborhood, are in therapy. Kevin's wife, Michelle, says moving back to San Bruno was out of the question.
It's not a home if you don't feel safe, and for that night it almost killed us. So that was a lot of the reason why we decided to at least start over.
The San Bruno explosion put a spotlight on something most people don't think about, the vast network of underground pipes that deliver natural gas to people's homes. One of the main transmission lines in the Bay Area, Line 132, ran under the Crestmore neighborhood of San Bruno. It was installed by Pacific Gas and Electric in 1956, which makes it an old pipe, but not the oldest in the system. And according to David Howitt, an engineer at the University of California, Davis, who studies the behavior of metals, this particular piece of pipe under Crestmore just wasn't made very well.
The way that pipe was made was you bend it into shape rather like you would fold over a piece of paper, and then the two edges of the pipe, of course, have to be stuck together.
NTSB investigators found that when that gap was filled in with welding material, whoever welded it didn't use enough metal.
So what you essentially had was a local region of the pipe that was much thinner than it should have been. And so what happens is that's where it failed.
After the explosion, federal and state investigators descended on the area, and they found that the section of pipe that blew up had more than 150 welding defects. Which begs an important question. Where else might similar shoddy pipes exist? What other sections of pipe were made by the same pipe maker or crew? This is critical because without knowing how strong a pipe is, there is no way of knowing how much pressure it can withstand or how long it might last. Investigators hope to find these answers in PG&E's archives, but according to the utility, those records have been lost.
You don't have to have all records.
This is Richard Kuperwitz, an independent pipeline expert in Redmond, Washington, who has studied pipe ruptures for 40 years.
But it is extremely unusual to not have certain records related to your pipeline, even pipeline that's 50 or 60 or 70 years old.
PG&E says it has made important changes. It has hired a new CEO and has beefed up its gas division. It's also agreed to run expensive pressure tests on miles of buried pipelines in the Bay Area. But many questions remain. For instance, what final straw caused that pipe to eventually burst? And what lessons can we take from the disaster? For San Bruno City Manager Connie Jackson and many others here, tomorrow's report from the NTSB will be momentous.
First and foremost, we want the truth. What happened? Why did it happen? And probably more importantly, what will need to be done in order to assure that this never happens again?
Over the last year, state and federal lawmakers have introduced legislation aiming to reduce the likelihood of another explosion like what happened in San Bruno. The federal bills would increase inspections and notify people who live above gas lines. They also would require that utilities install automatic shutoff valves so that fires could be put out much faster. Here in Crestmore, the gas line has been decommissioned for good. The sound of hammers breaks the morning silence. Bill McGoolahan is reviewing designs with his architect. He and his wife, Betty, are one of the first families to rebuild here.
Did we ever resolve the situation about having the bench here?
Like other families in Cressmore, the McGoolahans received money from PG&E to help pay for temporary housing and other expenses. Now their insurance is funding much of the reconstruction. Bill says, especially for his children, the excitement over a new house is what will make it possible to return to this neighborhood.
So I think we had to change the house to make it viable that we could move back in. So that's what we've done.
About 100 families, including the McGoolahans, have filed lawsuits against PG&E, alleging that the company could have prevented the explosion. The first batch is expected to reach trial next summer. For Quest, I'm Amy Standen, KQED News.
You can hear more stories from survivors and find photos on our website, kqed.org/quest.
Major funding for Quest is provided by the National Science Foundation and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with additional support from the Dirk and Charlene Capsanel Foundation.